You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. It's 7:35 in the morning, which means that in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. Noel, why don't you tell us what's happening today?
Australia is Malaysia's top 10 among the top 10 trading partners. So how could COVID change the investment and trade relationship between both countries? And what are the longer term opportunities from RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership? So I hope to explore these issues with him, Paul Sender, the Senior Trade and Investment Commissioner of Austrade, Malaysia and Brunei, to discuss some of this economic relationship between both countries and also the tense relationship between Australia and China.
Tense indeed. We have seen those ties deteriorate over the past couple of months. So it'll be an interesting conversation happening after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, the real estate market in the Asia-Pacific region seems to be picking up steam with rising translation volumes, according to Savills in their Asia-Pacific Investment Q1 report this year. So this report looked at the real estate market in the APAC region to discern the trends for the quarter.
The pickup in transactions volumes may suggest a growing confidence among regional real estate investors as Asia continues to outpace both Europe and the US in terms of recovery.
So for a deeper look at the report, we have with us this morning Simon Smith, Asia-Pacific Regional Head of Research and Consultancy at Savills. Good morning, Simon. Thank you so much for joining us today. So from your report, can it be discerned which markets have recovered from the COVID-19 crisis and similarly which markets have lagged?
Yes. I mean, even last year we saw signs of recovery in some of the regional markets. Three economies in particular, China, Taiwan and Vietnam, actually reported positive GDP growth last year. In the real estate markets, it was really in the final quarter of 2020 that we saw real growth in investment volumes on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So recovery was beginning even late last year, and in some areas has continued into this year, which is positive. Other markets have lagged, but that's been very contingent on the success of containment of the virus and the rollout of vaccination. You know, going forwards, you know, we're still broadly optimistic about the second half of this year, but there are obviously concerns as more aggressive variants emerge in the region that recovery may consequently be delayed.
Within each of some of these key markets that you mentioned, is the recovery seen more in the residential and industrial sector, or is office property struggling, or it has also recovered?
Obviously, it almost goes without saying that the hardest hit sectors have been hospitality and retail. Travel restrictions have limited cross-border flows of people and capital, so there are no surprises there. In larger economies, I mean, China, for example, hospitality and retail have maybe fared a little bit better because they can fall back on domestic tourism and domestic consumption expenditure, some of it deferred from overseas. So they've emerged relatively better, those sectors, in the larger, stronger economies. Residential, unusually, you were mentioning that. You know, there's been a lot of deferred spending, you know, because people have been forced to remain at home. So there's a lot of liquidity in the residential markets generally at the moment. And of course, interest rates are at historical lows. So the residential markets we've seen have remained relatively firm throughout the COVID, which has been positive. Elsewhere, office markets, of course, have faced the threat of corporate solvency or corporate insolvency. Now, bankruptcies have been limited by, I think, particularly government stimulus measures. So once we begin to emerge from this, it's going to be interesting to see whether we see, you know, further bankruptcies, for example, which may impact office demand in some markets. And then, of course, there's the whole debate about flexible working and work from home and whether that will represent a longer term structural change to demand in the office market. I think many people are still undecided about that. Certainly, to an extent, you know, people will choose to work from home going forwards. But whether this is a sort of wholesale change, I'm not convinced, particularly in Asia, you know, where for many reasons, particularly our dense housing, work from home is a less appealing option for many people.
So it's interesting you mentioned that because banks like DBS and Stanchart in Singapore have indicated they will be cutting down on real estate space. So I'm just wondering then, might you expect this trend, say, in Malaysia too?
With the banks, you know, given the very difficult operating environment, you know, they've been very keen to cut costs. Now, if you look at your cost base, you know, it's the very expensive office markets like Hong Kong, Tokyo, Singapore, where cutting back on your floor space yields the maximum impact on your bottom line. So they've been ripe for downscaling, for surrendering. Whether that demand returns again later on is going to be interesting. I mean, here in Hong Kong, for example, we have a record high IPO pipeline this year, and the markets, I think, will be increasingly driven by mainland demand.
Right, Simon. But in terms from an investor perspective, what are buyers looking for in the region? Is it simply an opportunistic element here? Are they looking for good yield or capital appreciation when they invest?
Yes, I mean, everybody wants, you know, fantastic core assets, you know, stabilized, you know, offering, you know, strong yields. The problem is that there are just so few of those types of assets available. Because of what's happened, what we're seeing in the region is a huge amount of unallocated capital. So there's a lot of money waiting to enter the real estate markets regionally. We estimate around $40 billion, and that those funds are all chasing similar assets and similar asset classes. So deal making is going to be very competitive this year. And as I mentioned earlier, investment volumes are already ticking up even late last year. So there's this huge wave of money to come into this market. The problem is just availability of good quality stock. I mean, one of the outstanding asset classes of the last few years has been industrial, of course. I think you've seen this in Malaysia, but it's not unique to Malaysia or even the Asia-Pac region. It's very much a global trend.
Now, looking at specific markets, though, Simon, China being one of the first major economies to recover, how will the property sector fare there moving forward, given the concerns of speculation and the government tightening measures to cool the market?
Yes, that's right. For a while now, there have been concerns about very high debt levels, both personal, corporate, and government. And yes, there have been anti-speculation measures, both at a central government level, but also at a city level. In common with us, we're in the region, residential markets there still seem relatively buoyant. Buyer sentiment's quite strong. Yeah, there's a lot of confidence, particularly in the residential markets in first and second tier cities, where there's sort of more wealth generation, more inward migration. But in the lower tier cities, I think the residential markets are still rather more challenging. Where we have seen strength is in retail. I think general retail has had a fairly average year, but luxury retail has really shone over the last 12 months.
Yeah, so given these changes and trends, how are property developers rethinking their portfolio of development and also maybe design of residential and commercial properties?
Yes, I mean, I think particularly in the commercial sector where, you know, if we are going to move to increasingly flexible working, this very much changes the dynamics of office space. You know, we're seeing across many asset classes a greater sense of amenity, for example, greater provision of amenity for staff, you know, to attract people back into the office, allow them to work there efficiently. I think also the sort of millennials in the workspace are demanding, you know, a better work environment these days. It's no longer just simply about cubicles and pot plants. You know, people are expecting gyms and pantries and breakout rooms and bicycle sheds, et cetera, et cetera. I think in the industrial market, as I say, this has been a very strong asset class. I think what you're seeing is what used to be just about warehouses, for example, is now about modern logistics facilities. And those facilities themselves are becoming much more mixed use. So they may well these days comprise elements of offices or even residential. So all these asset classes, from a developer's perspective, do have to be rethought.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Simon. That was Simon Smith, Asia Pacific Regional Head of Research and Consultancy at Savills, giving us a bit of a look into the real estate market here in the Asia Pacific region, which does seem to be picking up steam. So a very interesting conversation there. But right now we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're going to be talking about the AstraZeneca vaccine rollout with Assistant Professor Dr. Farhan Rusli of the International Islamic University of Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.